Report with Rolene Marks for the latest information and the stories behind the news.
Rolene Marks, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. And you, Howard?
Excellent, thank you very, very much. Unfortunately, we do have to start with the story that we started speaking about yesterday, the tragic incident of a Holocaust survivor, 85 years old, stabbed 11 times, and her apartment set alight in five different places. We do know, and it happened just before you came on air yesterday, that two people were arrested for the crime. What do we know now?
Well, we do know that two people were arrested. They have not been formally charged as yet, but they have confirmed that they have been charged or arrested with murder with anti-Semitic motives. And this was today. You know, initially they thought maybe it wasn't anti-Semitic motives, but as we discussed yesterday, Howard, the details of the case look a lot like the murder of Sarah Halimi, and I think the French authorities are going to not want to be criticized the way they were for letting...
Because that it took months, didn't it?
It took months, and there was a big denial, and it was very, very disappointing and hurtful to the Jewish community. That and it's the same modus operandi. Two women, both elderly, both lived alone, both had reported incidents of feeling threatened by their neighbors. And we have heard from the family of Mireille Knoll, Zichrona Livracha, who have, they are definitely convinced that it was the neighbor. They say because nothing else was stolen except for Mireille's cell phone, which was found in the possession of the neighbor. And we have heard from French President Emmanuel Macron, who has said that he will do everything in his power to fight anti-Semitism. But I really think, you know, it's enough of tweets, and it's enough of, you know, big sweeping statements like an attack on Jews is an attack on France. We need to see real action. And I know that the chief rabbi of Paris has asked for people to take to the streets on Friday in a march called the White Rose March against anti-Semitism.
The horror of the story, of course, is that she was a Holocaust survivor. She had survived the possible extermination and ended her life by being stabbed 11 times in an anti-Semitic incident. It is just too horrific to actually contemplate.
It is an inconceivable horror. And you know, yesterday when we came on air, I could barely contain tears because it's just the hideous irony of ending her life in a situation that was consumed by hatred, the very hatred that she had managed to survive. For those who don't know the story of Mireille Knoll, she survived the roundup at the Velodrome d'Ive or the Val d'Ive during the infamous roundup of the Jews of Paris in 1942, where many were sent for certain death to Auschwitz and various other death camps all over Europe. And just to finish her days in it's indescribable. It really is. She was also wheelchair bound, a purely defenseless woman murdered in just an indescribably horrendous way. But one thing that has come out of the story is that it has made headline news all across the world, all over Europe, the United States, in South Africa as well. I think the level of disgust and horror at this crime has really woken the world up to just how detrimental and how painful and how dangerous anti-Semitism is.
Rolene, one of our listeners saying her name is pronounced Mireille.
Okay, well, I have it from the French. It's Mireille, but you know, however she pronounced her name, and thank you, you know, for the correction. It's just
equally
too
as horrific. Moving across, as we did yesterday, moving across the channel, there was the Enough is Enough march that took place in Parliament Square. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, I have to say, kol hakavod to the Jewish community of the UK. Initially, the numbers were thought to be in about 500, but over 1,500 people came out to protest Jeremy Corbyn and rising anti-Semitism, or the actual plague of anti-Semitism within the UK Labour Party. There was a small group of about 50 protesters who counter-protested, and one of them held up a poster with a yellow star saying Jews for Jez, which marchers and observers, including myself, found profoundly, profoundly offensive. This is exactly what we're talking about, this kind of anti-Semitism. And it's also a story that, you know, after I checked the news coverage of this across the United Kingdom, because the cynic in me wanted to see whether or not it got a proper amount of coverage. And with the exception of the Guardian, which was which only came later today and was very little coverage, the Daily Mail, the Independent, giving a lot of coverage to this, and a lot of people weighing in saying enough is enough, something has to be done about anti-Semitism in the Labour Party. Of course, you have the usual suspects making stupid comments, but a lot of people saying that, you know, if Jeremy Corbyn wants to have any kind of political career, it has to go. And, you know, I took a little bit of exception to the Daily Mail yesterday, who used the headline, Jeremy Corbyn makes a grovelling apology, and I didn't like the use of the word grovelling, because, you know, it kind of insinuated that he had to grovel, that he was forced to grovel. I didn't like that at all. I think that enough is enough, and he should be apologizing. And, you know, we need the media to stand behind incidents of racism, as they stand behind incidents of racism with other minority communities.
Although that said, Rolene, my sense is that although everybody's saying if he wants a political career, well, he certainly got a political career. He is head of the Labour Party, and he has been for some time. He's got a very long and, in inverted commas, successful political career. And that's the part that actually bothers me most, that he's managed to reach the highest level at the within the Labour Party with his virulently anti-Israel and anti-Semitic views. That's the part that bothers me most about the story.
Well, absolutely. I mean, this is the man who could be Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, or at least of England. Very, very worrying indeed, because this is somebody who has ignored requests to be interviewed by Jewish papers, but has given addresses and had tea with members of Hamas and Hezbollah. I know that there was a pundit who said that Jeremy Corbyn himself is not anti-Semitic, and I'm sorry, I have to disagree with that.
Please, absolutely.
I think somebody who allows this kind of cancer to spread, and his excuse for the anti-Semitic mural is, well, I haven't seen it, is unacceptable. There are some who say, well, maybe he's the poster child of anti-Semitism. Somebody who allows somebody like Raed Salah, who has been found guilty of incitement, and calls him a dignified citizen, and gives a voice and a platform to Hamas and Hezbollah. And I actually took exception to a member of the Labour Party saying, you know, not all Jews are Netanyahu supporting Zionists. And I take exception to that as well.
Absolutely.
That there are many different kinds of Zionists, and who our party affiliation is shouldn't detract from the fact that we are Zionist. Anytime you tell a Jewish person that Zionism is evil, or they can't be Zionist, you're telling us we have no right to national aspirations. So it certainly opened up a can of worms. In fact, the worms are everywhere, Howard.
Absolutely.
The can is open, the worms are everywhere. And it's time for some very, very frank discussions as to what exactly constitutes anti-Semitism to us as
well. At least this conversation is being had, and it is being had in the United Kingdom. Let's hope that it gathers some momentum. The German foreign minister has warned Palestinians do not tear down bridges. Tell us about this incident.
Well, this is Heiko Martin. Again, you know, I see people's reactions to things on social media, and sometimes I get frustrated. You know, Heiko Maas is the new foreign minister for Germany, and I saw somebody comment, unbelievable, he went to Yad Vashem and now he's speaking to Mahmoud Abbas. Unbelievable. You know, the reality of it all is we do have to look at these things from a macro level, and unfortunately, whether we like it or not, any international leader is in the region to meet with both sides. And Foreign Minister Maas spoke to Abbas and was actually quite stern with him and said to him that you don't need to tear down bridges, that if he tries to move forward on any kind of peace negotiation without the United States, it is going to be very, very difficult for him. So I think sometimes we need to think a little bit more deeper about the situation and look at why these people come to the region, and also visits to Abbas also present world leaders with an opportunity to also be very, very frank with him. And you know, I think we need to sometimes just pull back slightly.
Absolutely right. Finally, Israel is to grant refugee status to some Sudanese. We've been following this story, of course, is a very, very contentious one. But where are we now?
Well, this is quite incredible, because Israel's faced a lot of criticism over the last couple of months for the decision to deport migrant workers and refugees. It's as we've discussed a lot and at length, that it is soul destroying. It's very, very difficult. It's something that's really, really hurting us emotionally and also practically in Israel. We're very, very torn between practicalities and emotions, and are desperately looking for solutions. But what Israel has agreed to is, and this is from the Supreme Court, is that Sudanese refugees from the Nuba Mountains who have been waiting for an answer to their asylum requests will be...
Oh, bless you.
Thank you. They will be granted asylum. They will have the same legal status as fellow Sudanese refugees from Darfur. And the reason for this is because they are seen as clear refugees fleeing an ethnic struggle and a genocide that is still going on in the Sudan. And the Supreme Court, who responded to a petition filed on behalf of the refugees by Carmel and Michal Pomerantz, agreed that this is a humanitarian crisis and they will be granting refugee status.
So I think it's an incredible thing that it's now being looked at a lot more closely, and that individual circumstances and circumstances from certain areas are being taken into account, so that it isn't a blanket ruling for everybody who is in Israel illegally.
Well, that's exactly the point. And you know, again, when people look at the region and especially look at Israel, they look at things from a very macro level and very much, you know, one solution seems to fit all or one decision seems to fit all. And as we know, because, you know, we work in the field and we know the dynamics of the region very, very well, things here in the Middle East and especially in Israel are never black or white. They are very, very nuanced and they come with many, many different layers. And you know, sometimes it does take, it is a lengthier process, and it does take the peeling back of these layers very, very slowly to uncover the facts beneath the surface.
Absolutely right there. Unfortunately, we do need to leave it. Raleen Marks with the Israel Report. That is, of course, is brought to you by the Blue Agency.